The Farming Programme with Arroquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
There's good news this week for flooded farmers. Or is it really good news?
Whoever's dreamt of scheme, they've had 3 months to get it sorted and they couldn't have got it any more wrong if they tried.
We've details of an important survey for contractors and it's many people's favourite Sunday lunch. Is it yours? The Great British Beef Week
content
is just around the corner.
Content on social media, sharing recipe ideas and suggestions, and there'll also be some food influence as well, sharing various recipes with roast beef reimagined.
We've important agronomy advice, a look at the markets and the week's farming news.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Hello, hope you've had a good week. This is the Farming Programme podcast for the 14th of April 2024. I'm Steve Orchard. In the news this week, licensing rules have changed, making it easier for farmers to grow hemp and encourage investment in the crop. Once licensed, farmers can grow the variety of cannabis containing less than 0.2% THC anywhere on the farm, and the maximum license period is extended from 3 to 6 years. The new proposals, which have been developed in collaboration with growers, include an option to apply for a license with a start date deferred by up to a year. The changes are planned to come into effect for the 2025 growing season. Syngenta has received approval from the Health and Safety Executive for use in Britain of Miravis Plus, which contains pyriflumetaphen and has delivered substantial yield gains in wheat and barley. Miravis Plus will be available to the market in a co-pack with the triazole fungicide prothioconazole. There will be a launch soon with more detail from Syngenta. And the Farming Recovery Fund has opened, offering grants of between £500 and £25,000 to farmers to return flooded land to the condition it was before Storm Henk. It has restrictions and it's not gone down well with many affected farmers and the NFU, as you'll hear in a few minutes. If you're a contractor, an important annual survey has opened asking for your contracting prices. Jill Hewitt is the CEO of the National Association of Agricultural Contractors. Jill, what's the survey all about?
It's a survey of our members, so it's very much a guide price. We have to doubly, triply emphasise that because it's still really important that people work out their individual costings for their business. Because to get all of those survey prices, quite often with a lot of them, there's been a significantly higher price and a lower price. So that's very much a middle figure. The idea is to give a guide so that people know a ballpark price where that operation cost is likely to start. But as we've said, it's really important that individual contractors go out and work out their costs or their depreciation, everything that's individual to their business, so that they can give a proper quote to their customers.
So this is a survey of NAAC members rather than of farmers asking how much they're paying?
Yes, very much from a member point of view. The idea being that incorporates their costs and how much they need to charge. Because that's obviously really important. They're investing a lot. A lot of them have got a lot of finance. They're paying staff. They're paying for training, travelling to and from work, downtime, all of these things that have to be taken into account that the farmer would potentially be paying if they were to do the operation themselves. And obviously, we've got to keep everybody in business because going forward, we need farmers and contractors.
So you carry out the survey, you ask your members what they charge for various different jobs. What then happens to the results?
They publish, they're on our website, which is naac.co.uk, and then they go out through the press. So that a lot of the general farming press will publish them. So they're available to anybody who needs them. We will then have them at shows and all that sort of thing. So they're widely available now.
So a farmer who's got a job to be done can have a look and see what an average price might be.
Yes, very much. It's based this year on 85 pence a litre for fuel, which is slightly lower than we were last year. But I think overall people can expect that generally the prices have gone up because that we've still got to take account of machinery prices, input costs, everything else, labour costs, insurance costs, which have gone up a lot over the last year.
Okay, thanks, Jill. Just give us that website one more time where your members can input their prices and where ultimately farmers can take a look at the results.
Yeah, so anybody can get a hold of the prices. It's www.naac.co.uk.
All right, Jill Hewitt, Chief Exec of the NAAC. Thanks for joining us on the Farming Programme again this morning.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Is roast beef your favourite Sunday lunch? Do you love a steak and chips at the local? Who doesn't? Great British Beef Week is just a few days away. So from Ladies in Beef, Millie Fife, what's so special about beef?
Well, I mean, it's so versatile in terms of what you can cook and enjoy as a family for a celebration. It can be anything from a spaghetti bolognese using beef mince to meatballs to a lasagna to then looking at a roast dinner, roast beef, or every time I talk to anyone about what their favourite beef to eat, it generally is a steak.
I must admit that certainly is my favourite beef joint. And here I upset most of my colleagues, and I'll probably upset you and most people listening now, because for me, a steak, I like it well done. Mm-hmm. Is there a right and wrong way, or is it just personal taste?
No, I think it is down to personal taste. I mean, it's entirely up to you how you would like it. I quite like mine medium rare, so it's still quite tender. But no, you have it how you like it. As long as you're eating British, it doesn't matter.
As long as you're actually eating it, then it doesn't matter what you do with it to a certain extent. So what actually happens on Great British Beef Week? What's actually being done?
Yeah, so the campaign, it runs between the 23rd and the 30th of April. So it kicks off on St. George's Day for the week. And we're obviously creating a lot of content on social media, sharing recipe ideas and suggestions. And there'll also be some food influence as well, sharing various recipes with roast beef reimagined. So a bit of a twist on your traditional roast dinner. But it's also highlighting the nutritional content of beef, the fact that it's so sustainable and it's one of the most sustainable meat products in the entire world. It's naturally delicious, grown predominantly on grass in the UK.
And there is a charity element to this as usual, isn't there?
Yes. So the charity partner again is the Royal Agricultural Benevolent Institution, RABI, and there's a number of events around the country that are generally involved with cooking or enjoying of beef and donating to that farming charity as well. So yes, it's not only about the enjoying and the eating and the promoting of beef farming in the UK and the eating, but also to support the UK farming community when times are challenging.
How can we support this campaign?
Really, as consumers, it's looking at the menu, demanding British on the menu, going to your local butchers, to your local deli, and asking for it and eating great British beef.
Millie, thank you so much for joining us on the Farming Programme. Let's look forward to another great British Beef Week.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on your show, Steve. I really appreciate it.
Out to the fields we go now with a crop report and some timely agronomy advice for us and just a T-shirt under his waterproofs, independent agronomist Sean Sparling. Morning, Sean.
Yes, morning, Steve. The rain's getting warmer, so it must be nearly summer. Typical April, isn't it? 20 degrees C last weekend, down to 11 with just 3 degrees overnight by the middle of the week. Back up to 18, 19 degrees to yesterday for the previous three. Double figures overnight, and then today we're back into the low teens again. And we're never too far away from a shower, annoyingly. 8.3 mil of rain again for me since I spoke to you last week. And with the constant blustery wind spraying, incredibly difficult at any time, really, other than first thing in the morning, and that's if you're lucky. And it's looking to stay windy with temperatures struggling into the low teens at best for the coming week as well. Hopefully it'll be a bit dry though. So wheat and barley. Now I know it's only the middle of April, but you really do need to forget about that. Cut these plants open, have a good look inside them, and I reckon there are going to be some people who will already be seeing leaf 3 starting to emerge in the early drilled fields on the main stem. And you know, probably that lead tiller is going to be in the same position within the next 10 to 14 days. So the T1 campaign is sneaking up on us once again. And assume nothing. Cut these plants open. The height of the crops may well differ, but quite often the growth stage can be about the same in the lesser varieties as well. So where are we? It's been cooled, then it was hot, then it's cold again. It's moist out there, the soil temperatures are in the low double figures and they're rising. Soils are moist, there's plenty of nitrogen out there waiting. We just need the days to warm up and it will all set off. There are still grass weeds being tidied up in the wheat. And just be careful around fertiliser application, liquid fertilisers in particular, but all forms of nitrogen in these windy, damp conditions, because the wind's going to be bruising the leaves and de-waxing them, particularly the more forward lush crops, but also the smaller, more prone growth habited ones as well. And the caustic nature of UAN and or herbicides applied to any bruised cereal leaves can very easily cause significant levels of scorch, as one grower I drove past on Thursday will clearly discover as he goes and drives past it as well. Much more likely to scorch where trace element deficiencies still exist as well. So to minimise the scorch risk, correct any nutritional issues you've got before you go spraying herbicides. And if you're applying things like Pacifica Plus, Hatra, Broadway, etc., stay 5 to 7 days clear either side of them and the liquid fertilisers in particular. Let these crops recover before you put something caustic on them. Crops moving, as I said, but it's temperature and it's filicron that govern leaf emergence, not the calendar day. So if it stays cool, we buy a bit of time. But if temperatures shoot into the low 20s all of a sudden, as they may well do, if you do your planning by calendar day, you could easily find some of these wheats are a fortnight wrong either way by growth stage. So it's eyes down for a full house. Winter barley really shifting now. So watch the growth stage very closely, particularly growth regulator latest safe application timings. Growth stage 30 cut off on some of the 750s Clomaquats, so make sure you know what you're dealing with. Very good weather for Rinker and Net Blotch, rust out there as well in Kingsbarn. And if it does come warm, these frothy early drilled winter cereals could well see levels of mildew we haven't seen for a couple of years. Spring drilling stuttering along between the showers again this week, still plenty to put in, getting late enough for spring wheat and spring barley, especially the spring wheat. Having said that, I have drilled spring barley on the 22nd of April and it was just about okay. I've never drilled spring wheat this late. I guess it probably wouldn't be particularly okay, but it's all about the soil conditions. You know your farms better than I do. Still 2 or 3 weeks until that cuckoo sings, I suppose, but don't forget there are 3 main phases of growth in spring cereals: canopy formation, canopy expansion and grain fill. And all of those things take between 6 and 8 weeks to complete on each one. So that's between 18 and 24 weeks from emergence, or 4 to 5.5 months. So if you get them in tomorrow, at best they're going to be ready to combine around the middle of August, but it could easily be as late as the end of September if the conditions are against us. I'm just trying to manage expectations because yields are going to be all over the place the later you drill spring wheat, spring oats, spring barley. Barley and oats more forgiving, but that gap narrows the later you go, and it's getting very narrow now. And no point growing anything for a loss. Spring beans, getting plenty late enough, I think, for spring beans now. Technically, once you get past the end of March, they never quite perform. Although last year's 17th of April drilling did okay for me. There's still plenty of peas, linseed, potatoes to get in the ground, sugar beet to get in the ground as well. Bits of beet went in this week. I had some go in on the 25th of March, and that's up in rows now on Lincoln Heath. But I still have over 90% of my sugar beet area to drill. Late drilled sugar beet worries me far less than late drilled other things. But the Mysis persici, now they do worry me. They're already on the wing, so they may well be at threshold far earlier than we've ever seen. One wingless nymph per 4 plants from emergence, that's your threshold, and be very, very alert to that. And remember to drill your cruiser dress seed first. You'll get the most from it then. You'll get about 10 weeks or so protection from virus there. And then if you do need to go, you would have to put flunicamid on first, followed by the acetamiprid if you need to. On sugar beet, where you haven't got cruiser on the seed, once you get to threshold, you would start with the acetamiprid first and then follow that up with the flunicamid. And then we pray for an emergency authorisation of a third insecticide, but we should know whether or not we've got that soon. I think it's going to be a hell of a ride this year in more ways than one. It's already a hell of a ride, but it is a drier forecast. The return of the martins and the swallows should be imminent. And once they come home, things will get better, I promise. So let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Thank you, Sean. The Farming Recovery Fund has opened, aimed at supporting flooded farmers. But is it fit for purpose? The thoughts of the NFU and one badly affected farmer, plus the markets and weather, next.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
This is the Farming Programme online podcast edition. I'm Steve Orchard. We've talked plenty recently about the floods, not just in Lincolnshire, but across the country. And sadly, they've not gone away. But the government's Farming Recovery Fund has opened. So all's well then. Well, no, not really. We'll hear from Farmer Henry Ward in a minute. But first, NFU area organiser Rhonda Thompson. What's the NFU's view of the scheme?
This flood recovery fund doesn't seem to be quite what was expected. As you know, I've worked really closely with the minister and local MPs. We've had a lot of support, and the NFU as a whole were feeling very certain that this wasn't what was actually intended, because so many farmers are ineligible as things stand. But, you know, please rest assured, the NFU have been taking this up with DEFRA since more details of the scheme emerged. And I would say watch this space. I think we're going to see some amendments, and soon.
Well, that would be hugely reassuring, not, as you say, not just to Henry, but to everybody else
to everyone affected
by this. Are you feeling then that the scheme is too restricted?
It does seem very prescriptive. As I say, the NFU are talking to DEFRA and raising the point about farmers such as Henry and many, many more across the country who've been very, very badly hit and cannot claim a penny. And I suppose, you know, we have to give them the opportunity to make the amendments. But we feel confident this isn't what they intended, and we should see some change in very soon.
All right. Well, let's keep fingers crossed, because, I mean, even looking at the amounts, Rhonda, £25,000 top end.
There will be lots of farmers who have got huge losses and are facing, even if they haven't got as much flooding as people like Henry, they're facing the prospect of being able to get very little to harvest this year. It's going to be incredibly tough for all farmers. So we would hope that this is something that the government is paying particular attention to. We know they were with the Flood Recovery Fund. As I said, it's not perfect. It needs some changes, and we are doing everything we can to emphasise that to them.
There's already been a change since I spoke to Rhonda, the restriction that meant that the centre of a flooded field had to be within 150 metres of the river has been removed. But that doesn't help Farmer Henry Ward for another reason. Henry, 3 weeks ago, we were standing at the Turret Arms overlooking your lake. I won't call it a farm. 3 feet or so underwater, unable to access your farm and your home except by boat. Yet it appears you won't receive any compensation. What's going on?
Yes, so the reason that I've been given as to why we're not eligible is frankly ridiculous, but it's because the river that bursts its tanks on our farm is called the Barling Zoe, and that river just hasn't been listed by DEFRA as an eligible river to claim against.
Now, is that just a clerical error, or is it genuine that that river's excluded?
No, so the reason they've given me for the river being excluded, which is laughable, is because that river apparently didn't reach the required level of water in the river to, like, trigger eligibility. The water level wasn't high enough. Now, that is because there are two whacking great holes in the riverbank, and that river was spread over 2,000 acres. So, of course, the river level wasn't going to be high because it was over mine and seven other farmers' lands. I mean, you just couldn't write this stuff.
Unbelievable, really, is it? And talking to Rhonda, she feels that the scheme itself isn't quite what was intended. No. But is there any comeback for you? Are you able to appeal this?
At the minute, no. I'm just making as much noise. I'm sure everyone's fed up of hearing my voice on all media everywhere. Frankly, I'm fed up of having to fight tooth and nail. But to be fair, the RPA have been in touch directly with me since I've started banging the drum. And also, Robbie Moore, Flooding Minister, has been on the phone. But at the minute, it's all sort of warm words from them saying, look, we're looking into it, we're seeing what we can do. And I just said to them, look, frankly, I shouldn't be here. I've been through enough stress and agony for the past 6 months. I should have been at the top of this list for this 25,000. And if I'm not eligible for 25,000, frankly, I want to meet the farmer who is eligible for it, because they must be at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean somewhere.
The £25,000 figure, I'm just wondering whether that's something that's fairly arbitrary, because you told me a few weeks ago you were about 100 grand down.
£25,000. Is a lot of money. no two ways about it. It's a lot of money and it will help. But in the grand scheme of things for me, I'm going to be £150,000 out of pocket this year because I'm not going to have a harvest at that farm. This time next year, I'm going to have nothing in those sheds at Short Ferry to sell. So it is an arbitrary figure, but it would have helped. And I just, they announced it in January, and I thought, well, great, we'll get that. That'll take the sting out of the tail. And then to be told, no, you're not eligible, it's just absolutely ridiculous.
It must have been heartbreaking when you had the news.
So found out on Tuesday, and I was sat on my laptop in the office because it was a miserable afternoon. I thought I'll get on and get an application done. And sort of figured out myself that I wasn't going to be eligible. And I was sat there in the office chair, looking, just staring at my laptop. And I didn't know whether to laugh, cry. To be honest, I felt physically sick for about half an hour. I just couldn't believe, I still can't believe it now, to be honest. But this scheme, whoever's dreamt this scheme, I've had 3 months to get it sorted. And they couldn't have got it any more wrong if they tried.
Unbelievable. We feel for you and the other affected farmers, Henry, and we'll keep this in the public's attention.
Lynx FM Farming. Market reports.
Starting with livestock from Masons Rural at Louth, auctioneer Ed Middleton. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Steve. This week we start off with the prime cattle. Heifers all in average this week, 280.16 pence per kilo, and the steers all in average 265.5 pence a kilo. Top price in the steers and the heifers this week were J&S Brooks of Strubby, selling heifers to £1,690.05 and selling steers to £1,778.70. Cull cows this week, all in average 159.5 pence per kilo, with a top price from ADV Limited of Skegness. Moving on to the sheep, we had kind of a tale of two halves really. Probably 40% of the prime hogs penned today would have been probably sold better in the stores. So slightly back on usual SQQ of 348.18 pence per kilo and an all-in average pounds per head of 159.31 pounds per head. Saying that, good meated hogs continue to sell over the 400 pence per kilo with a top price this week from W.R. Hanson, the son of Coningsby, at £226. Top price in the pence per kilo were E.J. Benj of Woodall Spa at 405 pence per kilo. Moving on to the cull ewes, this week we had an all-in average of £111.90. A bit of an up-and-down trade with a lot of average condition ewes in the mix. Top price went to E.J. Benj of Woodall Spa at £182. Stall lambs, over 100 stall lambs in this week, topping at £134 with an average of £106.82. Super entry of ewes and lambs this week with a top price of £105 per life from Woodthorpe Hall Farms of Strubby. Last Friday we had our first special spring show and sale of store cattle. Kicking off the sale, the champion steer from R.L. Richardson of Skegness sold for a whopping £1,800. Their run of all limbers and side cattle averaged an impressive £1,418.18. A reminder, we're taking entries for our next special spring store sale on Friday the 19th. That is breeding cattle and store cattle. So if you have any entries, please don't hesitate to give me a call. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Ed. And to the grain markets with Open Fields' Kit Dickinson. Morning, Kit.
Well, good morning, Steve. Last week, this report followed the release of the USDA's quarterly stocks and acreage numbers, which during calm market conditions shone some positive light across the markets during long-awaiting positive price action. Since then, we have seen little activity as range-bound markets continue to look for absent direction, leaving little fresh news to be reported on. However, at 5 o'clock on Thursday, witnessed the release of the monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate Report. Average early predictions do suggest an increase in 23-24 US carryout and global carryout numbers. Yet, subsequent predictions on corn show an overall opinion that those numbers will be reduced. We are due to have a tug of war between the maize bulls and the wheat bears should such numbers actually come to fruition. The battle will be whether the wheat increases or the corn reduces and have a stronger bearing on price direction. Aside from waiting for this release, where many will be trawling through the numbers for the guidance as mentioned above, time has been spent on monitoring global weather conditions and current developments. As mentioned last week, UK farmers certainly don't need to be reminded of the poor planting conditions which are developing across the Northern Hemisphere. Currently, Bulgaria and Romanian corn conditions are far from ideal, and some market participants have already been reducing their national production numbers, which will have a significant effect on the EU balance sheet. Furthermore, the US is still recording a record maize yield, with areas of the Midwest seeing widespread rains hampering fieldwork. The same has been seen in the central and southern plains, which is due to remain until next Wednesday, yielding little confidence in the current production estimates. I'll then add that this wet front is extending down to Brazil and Argentina, whereas the US is mostly maize exporters. Estimates for large crops are reduced. The balance sheet for the coming season is far from written, and there could be plenty of surprises to be written in yet. So looking at barley, the EU crop and the UK crop for 2024 malting barley prices continue to be supported by the slow pace of planting. Prices in France are higher on both 23 and 24. Planting is behind the normal area done at this time of year. Prices in Denmark and the UK are lower for 23 as weak demand remains, but 24 prices are up in line with the French market. At the end of last week, spring barley planting in France was about 85% complete. The remaining area to be completed is mainly across northern France, where soils are still too wet. The weather forecast is again mixed for this coming week. The planting progress in the UK is still varied. We think about 55% has been planted so far in England, and this has been challenging due to the weather in the last week. East Anglia is about 85% done, especially on the lighter, good quality malting barley land. In the south and southeast, about 55%. Good progress on light chalk, but further west is more of an issue. Lincolnshire is now about 60% and progressed well over the weekend. Yorkshire is about 50% complete, mostly on the wolds, and nothing on the heavier land. More rain again this week will delay progress in some areas. Scotland has made a start, but only 5%, and heavy rain continues to delay their progress. So looking at oilseed rape, the teeth rapeseed has found direction this week based on firmer veg oil markets, crude oil, and early flowering in Europe. Palm oil has maintained its firm footing and is now a well-known story of high demand and tight supply that will continue to affect this market. However, the changes this week have come more from the crude oil that has now rallied to over 90 and has been able to consolidate those levels for now. Largely, this is due to the continued tensions between Israel and Iran, which continue to escalate, adding risk to an already very volatile situation. So looking at prices this week, feed wheat for May, 170 to 180, July, 175 to 185, new crop off the combine, 173 to 183, and November, 190 to 198. Milling wheat premiums for old crop are circa £55 to £60. Feed barley for May, 150 to 158, July, 150 to 160, the same off the combine for August, 150 to 160, and November, 165 to 175. Malting barley premiums are circa £60 to £65. Oilseed rape, old crop, limited demand at £350 to £360. And for new crop prices, please do speak to your local open field farm business manager.
Thanks, Kit.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
Just light rain, but some of it most days this week. Still breezy from the west, but easing later in the week. Cooler with daytime highs of around 10 or 11 and lows of 5 or 6 overnight. Next week, we're considering the pros and cons of hydrogen for powering tractors and farm machinery. Plus, of course, the week's farming news, weather, crops and markets. I'm Steve Orchard. Until then, have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Arrowquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, BSI ISO 9001 accredited.